We're going to go to the break, and when we get back, David Murata will be joining us from Murata Wealth Management. He's here every single month. Of course, you read him in the daily newspaper every single Monday, but we have a scoop for you today. We're going to be talking about an upcoming column on Paul Ryan and specifically Paul Ryanomics. What are Ryanomics? Should we be excited? Should we be scared? Should we be fearful? Is it the end of the social safety net? We'll find out when we return with David Murata right after this.
Another day's at end. Mama says she's tired again.
977-1070. That's the phone number here on The Shilling Show. Hey, thanks for joining us weekdays from noon to 2. It's the place to be. And this is where the news is made. And this is where we have interesting discussions, whether you agree or disagree, things that will prompt you to think. And David Murata is with us. He's the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratonmoney.com. And today, talking about the subject of Paul Ryan, specifically Paul Ryanomics. I love the title. I haven't heard anybody else using it, so perhaps you're the very first. David, welcome to The Shilling Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so first of all, I wanted to get your own response to the Ryan pick. Did it surprise you, or did you really think, hey, he might go in this direction?
I certainly thought that Paul Ryan would make a good pick. It has the ability of taking somebody who is politically savvy, knows how to compromise, but also has an ideology that certainly will excite those who have the economic sense to look at what's happening in the country and what needs to be done. He's certainly, in his pick of Paul Ryan, he says, we have budget issues that we need to solve. We need to take some hard choices. The Obama administration has not taken any choices, and so we're at least willing to put something on the table that will work.
You mentioned that the Obama administration really not making any substantive progress or even putting any proposals on the board other than raising taxes, which isn't going to help the problem. The United States Senate refusing to pass a budget now for, I think, going on 3 years. And so we have all these people that are running away from the problem. Why is it that so many people are willing to avoid these difficult topics? I mean, I understand it's unpleasant to talk about, but people have to be grown-ups and face reality.
Actually, they don't have to be grown-ups.
Find
one politician in Greece who's been held accountable for Greece's situation and had anything negative happen to him personally, and I'll concede the point that they need to face facts, but they don't. We have people who have exacerbated the problem who are no longer even politicians, and mm-hmm. So politicians know their half-life is short. If you're in the House, you need to be reelected every 2 years. And if you don't sway with the winds, you get voted out in one of those two-year sways. Same thing's true in the Senate, not quite as much. They have to be reelected every 6 years. But being reelected every 6 years does mean that you have to appeal to an entire state's constituency. And just look at the strident, the strident criticisms of Paul Ryan. He's going to be raked over the coals and he already has been, but he's going to be raked over the coals even more. They will demonize him and vilify him, and no one wants particularly that to happen. Politicians don't want that to happen to them for their family's sakes, if even not for their own sakes. So I don't think we reward in this country making hard decisions and being able to actually speak truth to your constituency.
You know, David, it's interesting that you say that because it really does happen, and people are always, there's background research going on constantly on who might be a candidate for a certain office, and they put together these dossiers in order to undermine their candidacies. It's kind of the way that politics is played today. And yet I guess the other option would have been to go with a very safe pick like a Rob Portman who, people only know the name of most people probably because it had been tossed around as a safe choice for Mitt Romney, and yet that doesn't bring any excitement to the base for people who are saying, well, has he ever taken a principled stand on any of these issues? And if the answer is no, then I think you're left with a bunch of people who are really uninspired. Is there any middle ground or one way better than the other?
I actually think that a straight conservative value, someone who is willing to expound more liberty, more free market, mm-hmm. and make a good case for it, is much better than a person who's in the middle and trying to please all sides, because a more stark pick between an economic path that's going to work and a socialist path that's not going to work, I think, has the advantage of being able to make it a clear choice and you know what you're voting for. If people compromise and they're wishy-washy, then it's like John McCain trying to give away more goodies than Barack Obama. He can't do it. He can't compete in that. Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter is probably the last stark choice we had, and I think Reagan was one of the few people able to defeat an incumbent president because of it. So I'm hopeful that a little bit more stark choice will make matters. Now, on the other hand, a vice presidential candidate doesn't make or break the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a vice presidential candidate. But it does have the ability to at least send a message that says, I'm willing to go here.
You know, you mentioned John McCain, and it's giving me a horrible flashback to an evening where we were invited over to a friend's house to have a little debate watching party 4 years ago. And John McCain comes out and steps on the stage and starts talking about how he's going to hand out other people's money, he didn't put it that way, in order to help people who are irresponsible in getting mortgages that they couldn't afford. And all of a sudden, all the air just went out of the room and everybody was deflated. They started going over to the snack table and playing some billiards and really not watching after that. And there was no stark choice there.
Yeah, we kept waiting for John McCain to have an opinion that was not just a watered-down opinion of Barack Obama, and he didn't. And he lost, and he lost horribly. And I don't think someone like Paul Ryan makes the same mistake.
Let's go to the phones and say hello to Gregory. Gregory, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David Morata.
David Morata, really appreciate what you say and do. And hey, Rob, I'm going to just make a statement. I feel like Social Security was a bad thing to start with, a pyramid scheme that's now, because of changing factors, is imploding. But at the same time, I've been paying in since 1972 for 40 years. I was required to by law. And even though I will vote for Romney, and I do think Ryan's plan is at least a start, I do want my money back, period, at whatever it takes, because I had to pay it in, even if that means that it's the generations coming that have to pay it. Our government made us do it, and so I want my Social Security, and that sounds selfish, but I feel that way. And I'm just going to sign off and hear y'all's comments.
Yeah, Greg, thanks very much. No, this is an important discussion to have. David?
Yeah, and Greg is right. I don't think Paul Ryan or Mitt Romney is going to touch Social Security for someone Greg's age. It's not the right solution, because we have so many people who depend on it. There does come a point at which, even though something is guaranteed, it needs to be considered for reduction, because all of the government workers in Greece with their fat government pensions are saying, hey, we don't want our government pensions reduced. The way I look at Social Security is my Social Security payments paid for my parents and my grandparents. And then the only question is, do I want my kids to pay for mine? And if my kids do have to pay for mine, I will carefully collect my Social Security, put it in a fund, and gift it back to them when I die, because they're going to need it a lot more than I am. I don't think I'm 51, and I don't think Social Security will be gone by the time I need it in another 15 years. I think it will still be there. And I've heard a great argument for why it shouldn't be means tested. You know, Justin, I've said means testing is probably where we're headed. I heard a great argument for why it should be not be means tested, because it makes it a more progressive tax. And we'll talk about that a little bit with Paul Ryanomics and why more progression actually makes things worse.
Yeah, this is what bothers me a lot about the means testing. And I think that's an easy way out for people, because it's okay, so we can start cutting back on the number of people who are eligible. We can get the ratios back in line for the number of people supporting the other people. But this is a progressive tax. This is the wrong direction that the country should be going in. Less progressivism in taxation is a good thing. And yet I keep hearing calls for not only this, but in other areas, even locally, like in real estate tax and on the state level, where they're giving rebates to certain people. They're giving rebates on car taxes. Everything is turned progressive in taxation. That certainly can't be a good sign.
Yeah, it's interesting in reading on Paul Ryan's economics, it was interesting to note he advocates a much simpler and flatter tax code. He proposes just two rates, 10% and 25%, and he would eliminate many of the tax loopholes that allow some companies to pay lower rates. But what's interesting is just a thought experiment. Imagine there were just two rates, 10% and 100%. So beyond a certain amount, the government takes every single dime you earn. How many dollars would be earned over the 10% rate and in the 100% rate?
None.
The answer is none. And yet the CBO and all has to compute it as though the answer is yes. In that case, because the tax code is so progressive, it truncates all productivity beyond a certain point. And if you look at the economics under that tax code, you will find that the top marginal rate might be 100%, but the average rate or the effective rate is going to be 10%, because everyone's going to be paying at the 10% rate. No one is going to be paying at the 100% rate. And evidence that the top marginal rate is too high is when you have very few companies paying that top marginal rate. In that case, a flatter tax code that was 20% across the boards might collect twice as much taxes, and yet you'd be reducing the top marginal rate by 80%.
Yeah, these are the sorts of things that people need to understand and consider when they're saying, take more from the wealthy, take more, have them pay their fair share. 977-1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show. David Morata is our guest. If you want to get in line, you can queue up right now for right after the break. We'll continue this talk about Paul Ryanomics and some of the specifics of his plans. Stay with us. is the phone number. Bruce is standing by to take your calls. If you have comments or questions for David Morata, he's our guest today. He's online at moradaonmoney.com. We're talking the topic today, Paul Ryanomics. What is it exactly that Paul Ryan stands for, and how would that affect the country? Let's get started with some of the specifics on Medicare, because this is the one that's being used by the opposition to scare people. Oh, my goodness, Paul Ryan, if you elect him, senior citizens, you're in big trouble. You'll be kicked to the curb, and no one will be there to help you. There we go.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Paul Ryan's proposals on Medicare are actually very mild. He'd try to cut costs in two ways. First of all, you have to understand that Medicare is going to be what's going to be bankrupting. Medicare and programs like it will be bankrupting in the U.S., and the projections are dire. And just like wealth management, if you make small changes over time, they'll have a great effect. But if you wait until the last minute, then you have to make huge changes. Making those changes now are much easier to make than if we wait 10 or 15 years. So Paul Ryan would limit Medicare in two ways. First, he'd allow private insurance to compete with traditional Medicare. And the idea is that the competition might be able to deliver the services for a smaller price. Plans would have to be at least as good as Medicare, and the premium support would be fixed at the second least expensive plan offered. So the competition hopefully will push prices down. And then the second way he'd limit it is if competition did not control costs, per capita increases would be capped at 0.5% above the total economic growth. So it can't grow faster than the economy, our payments, which is economic sense. They can't grow faster than the economy because we can't afford it. The interesting thing is that there's all this talk about a safety net for the poor, but there's no safety net for the economy. There's no safety net that will ensure that generous entitlements won't sink us as a country. And we need to have safety nets on both sides. And this is just a safety net to say that expenses cannot exceed our ability to pay, because that's what's been happening in the country, is that the government programs have been growing faster than our economic activity has been growing.
David Morata, we were having a conversation along these lines yesterday, and you know the topic was brought up. Well, gosh, you know the government is safe, and the stock market is risky. In other words, letting people invest or put some of their money aside for themselves and their own investments—that's risky, and people can't be trusted to do that. But the government is safe. Hey, the government's not safe. Look at this disaster; they've lost all this money.
Yeah, the idea that the government is safe—the government is only safe insofar as the private sector has the ability to support them. So if the private sector isn't safe, the government is triply not safe. If you look at the return on Social Security, if any financial product or the stock market had the return that Social Security has, no one would invest in it. Who wants to get a negative 7% return over a 35-year or 45-year period? That is actually the return. I computed my return once. My return was going to be -7% throughout my entire working career. The average for most people is closer to about 0.5%. Mm-hmm. And if you want 0.5% return, that's great. But if they had just taken their Social Security and thrown it in any bank or any CD, they could have had a guaranteed return that's higher than Social Security. So Social Security is an abysmal return, and that's what the government is. And not only that, Social Security has only had that return by continually collecting more and more money. And so the computations for the seniors who are retiring now starts out with very, very low rates they paid. Ours start out with very high rates they paid. And by the time we're collecting Social Security, I would expect our return to be negative.
Well, you talk about the 0.5% or so. Is that taking into account inflation? And if it is not, if that's not an inflation-adjusted number, I mean, that's the news has to be pretty bad over somebody's working career.
It is generally an inflation-adjusted number. Mm-hmm. So it actually, I'm trying to remember that. For mine, it's not when I computed it. So mine was actually I was going to collect less money in total than I was going to than I had put in. But yeah, the returns are just awful. For the Medicare, in terms of Paul Ryan, pegging it rather than into inflation, to total economic growth has great mm-hmm. advantage, because the economy has to be growing. And if the economy is growing regardless of inflation, then you've got a good methodology for knowing whether or not we can afford it.
Why are people, David Morata, so concerned with this concept of competition and competing with private insurance? You know, whenever we have big government monopolies or even monopolies in other areas, the costs are higher for the most part, the service is worse. And yet when you say, well, let's have some competition here, people again get very nervous.
Yeah, most of it is over the matter of what is power. I think that liberals fear the power of insurance companies controlling somehow people's Medicare payments and all the evil things that they're going to do with it. Conservatives, on the other hand, fear a centralized government making mistakes in their decisions and no competition to try other alternatives that might have a much better approach. So I think it has to do with control. Liberals put great stock and great confidence in the ability of rational people in government to make good decisions on behalf of the entire country, and want the very best people making the very best decisions. Conservatives just don't think such angels exist, mm-hmm. and therefore we are much more jaded and want a system that will reward those who make good decisions and punish those who don't.
I think part of the problem here is that there are people who are maybe closer to that description that conservatives are looking for, but most of them are not in government. Government tends to attract charlatans, people who are power hungry, who have other sorts of agendas, and the people that you reference are usually working in ministry or in private business because it's their passion, and I think that's where the majority of the honest people go.
You know, I'm maybe different. I've seen dishonest people in all of this mm-hmm. in all of this wonderful categories, and I've seen people who lack integrity. And sometimes the vocations that I think have the most honest people actually have people who are just as much mixed bag as you and I. So I would say everyone is in that mixed bag. Mm-hmm. I am one of the nicest people I know, and yet I know that my own ability to be able to control other people's lives is not very good. I have a healthy disrespect for my own whim. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even within the firm that I own, we sit down together as a firm and we talk about things and we try to make decisions by either a vote or consensus. And I get outvoted on all kinds of things. And I'm glad I do, because I'm not the end all be all. And I like a firm that has the ability to mix it up and the ability to say, well, but what about this and what about that? And I think those second and third and fourth pairs of eyes actually has a great advantage. We don't have that in government. We have a straight vote. And if you can push your agenda through, you get it pushed through. We don't have a consensus building process that's very good in government. And especially in the regulatory agencies, we just have one director of a regulatory agency who pretty much sets the tone and makes the rules.
977-1070 is the phone number. Continuing the discussion with David Morata. The topic is Paul Ryanomics. What does that mean? When we get back, I'd like to talk about a regulation of social programs and this concept of limiting government spending. Gosh, that sounds good on face value. Can it actually be done? We'll find out when The Shilling Show returns with David Morata. 977-1070.
Well, up. Pittsburgh are rolling down that eastern seaboard. I got my diesel wound up and she's a running like
977-1070. We have one line open for you as Bruce stands by to take your calls, comments, questions, criticisms, challenges for David Murata. We want to hear them, and don't wait till the very end of the program. If you have something to say, call us right now on 977-1070. Let's go to the phones because Bob has been waiting for us. Hello, Bob. Welcome to the Schilling Show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just tuned in, so you may have already covered this topic, but I've got a couple of different things thrown at me about the implementation of the Ryan tax plan, if it were, in fact, to be put in place, concerning seniors over the age of 55. Now, I listened to Rush a little bit yesterday, and he went over and over again, pounding home the point that anyone over 55 would not be affected in any way. And I've also heard then from, I can't remember where, that that's not actually the case, that number one, the donut hole in the prescription plan would be opened up again, and also that there would be limitations or elimination of a lot of the preventive screening things that are now covered by Medicare. So I just wondered if you could tell me which it is.
Okay. Bob, thank you for the call. Let's see if David has a response to that.
I'm actually not sure the answer to your question, Bob. Well, I do know a little bit about the general philosophy that the Ryan budget takes on social programs, and that is that currently the states administer federally funded programs such as Medicare and food stamps and things like that, and they have an economic incentive to add people to those programs, but they have little or no ability to reduce their costs. So what Ryan is trying to do in all of his budget is trying to put negative feedback on spending, so that there is some limit beyond which there isn't a greater incentive to spend. Because the states get more and more money, the more people they sign up for food stamps, they continually sign up people for food stamps. I think I've told this story before, but when I was an engineering major, I had one of my circuit boards blow up because I'd wired it wrong, and I had wired it without negative feedback. And so I understand from engineering that any system with without negative feedback blows up. Any system with too much negative feedback actually won't even work. And the conservative view is that the free market is overregulated and that social entitlements are underregulated. So the idea of regulating social entitlements, I think, is a great idea. I'm actually in favor of the donut hole, which basically says, look, There's a point at which there's a negative feedback so that you're trying not to spend money on prescriptions. But when you get beyond that, you must be in really dire straits because you must be really sick, and we'll cover it. That's what insurance is supposed to do. If I were to do that, I would make it an umbrella, not a donut. I wouldn't cover the first dollar. I wouldn't cover the second and third dollar. So I wouldn't cover anything in the donut hole and below, but I would have some approach or some umbrella beyond which we'll start covering it, because that's what insurance should be. That provides the negative feedback so that you're not having people who say, well, I'm going to go get these meds because even if I don't need them or I don't want them or I don't even think they'll help, they're free. And free does all kinds of strange stuff in the brain. You hear local officials talk about, well, why aren't we taking all that federal money? It's free.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start hearing that, that's a sign that you don't have enough regulation on social programs. And we've heard that more and more, at least around here in Charlottesville, with local politicians saying, why are they turning down all that free money? It's not free money, and it shouldn't be free money. And Paul Ryan's trying to make sure that it isn't free money, that there's actually some disincentive, someone who's saying, let's try to stop that. So his solution for a lot of social programs is to make block grants to the states. And then the states get a fixed amount of money. If they spend all that money, then everything that they spend beyond that is out of their own pocket. If they don't spend that money, then they have extra money. If they can limit the number of people that they spend it on, they can provide a better support for the people who are truly needy. But then they have to make those judgments. Used to do that with my children. I would, at a very young age, I gave them a certain amount of money. I actually helped them earn that certain amount of money. And then I'd have them buy their own clothes. So you don't have kids saying, oh, I want this $100 shirt because it's cool. You have kids saying, where can I go find the cheapest shirts because it's my money, and whatever I don't spend on shirts, I can actually spend on other things. And so they're making the hard economic choices. As a result, I think both of my children grew up actually having economic horse sense. And they know that money is dear, and they need to be careful how they spend it. So I think that produces the right kind of economic incentives.
977-1070 is the phone number. And this is what's so dangerous about all of this. And you talk about free this and free that and the government officials looking for the pots of money somewhere and the grants and all that, is that there is such a disconnection between the cost of something or the source of the money in many instances to the spending of the money. And so if people just think it's a pot, well, I'm not hurting anybody by reaching my hand into the pot. But if some of these local politicians or on the state or federal level had to come up to you and, like, you know, forcibly extract the money out of your wallet and met with some resistance, they might be disinclined to do that. But we've made it too easy for people, either through insurance, which is no longer insurance, but like prepaid medical, or for politicians through the federal monies that are coming in. And therefore, they have no restraint.
Right. So I think the political question of the day for this election is, do we have adequate regulation, negative feedback, adequate regulation and negative feedback on the growth of social entitlements? That is the question of this election. And I think conservatives say, no, we don't. We need to regulate social programs. We have too much regulation on the free market and private enterprise. And that's why revenue is relatively constant or down. And you've got social entitlement and spending way up.
You know, Paul Ryan's not perfect, and nobody is. There's some things, some votes he's taken in the past. In fact, more than a handful, I think, that have been, I certainly wouldn't have taken such votes, and I'm not happy that he made those votes. But there's also this proposal on the table about possibly adding a value-added tax. That's something that Paul Ryan has discussed previously.
Yeah, both Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney are open to such a tax. Mm. They would use it to replace other revenue sources. My fear is that they will just do it as an added revenue source, and then we're going to have a value-added tax like Europe does, which government will find a way to spend. It's laughable to think that Romney is some right-wing fanatic. If you look at Ryan's voting record, he's voted for all kinds of things as political compromises. You know, probably the worst I fault him for is he voted for cash for clunkers, which is a terrible idea.
Oh, it's awful.
He didn't vote for the second cash for clunkers, so I give him a little bit of political savvy for kind of splitting the difference. But when they try to point Ryan out as the worst right-wing, you know, libertarian, he's anything but. He has good economic sense, but he also has a lot of political compromise. And I think that's why Romney picked him, is because Ryan agrees with the principles of smaller government, but he's also very politically savvy and compromises when compromises is what needs to happen in Washington. I'm not that kind of person, so it's one of the reasons why I hesitate running for office. it's why I'm a commentator, is because I'm trying to say what's right, and I don't have any of the political compromise to be able to have to say what people want to hear.
David Morata, there's a lot of people that say that the president just can't lose this election. I mean, I know that he can lose it, but many people think that he just has it in the bag. Do you think this ticket, the Romney-Ryan ticket, is able to win?
I give the president an edge for being reelected, and I give that president that edge because not enough people understand that economic decisions are always made at the margin. And if there was one thing that I would say educating the public on one fact is that economic decisions are made at the margin. And if people understood that one fact, I think they would realize that that Paul Ryan and Ryanomics is actually a very, very good sense for what will help curb runaway spending.
You know, if it makes or breaks the election that people understand even a simple economic fact, I'm not hopeful. I know a lot of people listening have a good handle on it, but I think there is a vast majority, or at least a good majority of Americans, who have no economic sense.
No doubt
whatsoever.
About it.
David Morata, always a great time and a great topic today. Visit him online at morataonmoney.com. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for contributing to the education of America.
We're going to keep at it, and whatever we can do to help. The nice thing is that people are listening to this program, even those on the left and the far, far left who may be monitoring for other reasons. Maybe you're getting a little bit of education along the way, or given at least something to think about. We've got open phones at the top of hour number two. Bruce is there for you at 977-1070. Would love to get your point of view on whatever is on your mind. And then it's Onkar Gatte from Ayn Rand Institute on the Ryan Rand Connection. Stay with us. More of The Schilling Show to come. Yeah.